All right, guys, after nearly a month's absence from Brushing Them Back with Kobe White and an audible I had to call today because we're coming from my Walmart, my Wally Media Group page instead of directly from our Sideline Sports page. So I do apologize for that. I got Kobe en route. Kobe's making his way. I see he just popped on into the green room. We're fixing to get started with this. Two things I do need to cover with you guys, though. With Kobe back, we want to make a quick announcement before we get into our conversation with our guest tonight. We are working diligently on getting the county baseball or the area baseball previews like we did last year. We're going to jump back on those this year. We're going to expand them into baseball and softball, and we hope you guys tune in. So now, before I bring – I'm going to bring Kobe up first because y'all hadn't seen him in quite a while. Everybody wants to get a look at him. You know, they actually thought that he had just quit the show because he hadn't been on here in so long, but actually he was trying to be a baseball player. Isn't that right, Kobe?
Trying to.
Anyway, but hey, Kobe, glad to have you back on the show, man. Glad to have you back. You know, we named the show after you. I'm glad you showed up for it. I appreciate that.
That's it, man.
All right, you didn't miss much. I was just chatting it up with our guest before we got started. We're going to go ahead and bring him up. Our guest today, if you're a Mississippi State fan, if you're a baseball fan, you're going to know this guy. He was absolutely electric when he played baseball at Mississippi State University. He was one of, I'm going to say, a handful of three or four players. If they would not have had him the year that they went to the College World Series and won it, I don't believe they'd have won it without him. That's for sure. We'll let him set the story straight on that. He might be really humble and say, no, I was just a team guy and all that kind of stuff. But we all know. We know, don't we, Kobe?
We know.
You went that route. Kobe's done that. Kobe tried to be that guy, and he couldn't. So he passed the torch to Landon, and Landon took it to the promised land. So let's bring him on up.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Landon, how you doing tonight, brother?
Pretty good.
Coming to us from the beautiful state of Georgia. We can't disclose his location. He's an important person, and we don't want people stalking him. All right. I don't know, Landon and Kobe, have you guys ever met? I mean, you were at State, but I think y'all's paths never crossed, did it?
No. I've had a couple late-night FaceTime calls with Tanner Allen, and he's –
we didn't get to play together, but I watched him a bunch.
I wish you guys had been there together, and Landon, you could have shown Kobe how to throw the ball really hard.
I don't know. Kobe's got an arm on him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Speaking of an arm, we're going to talk about this in a little while. Both of you guys threw the ball so hard you both hurt your arm, and you had to battle back from some injuries and some rehab. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But before we get started, first of all, Kobe has been on a few episodes here, and he's had conversations with former players, and they've talked about the whole CWS experience. Could it have been any more surreal than you standing on the mound at the end trying to bring home a championship for a school that in baseball has always been considered a storied program, a powerhouse in baseball, but never was able to get over the hump. So, you know, Kobe kind of went through that about what it was like for him and how disappointed they were they couldn't finish the deal. But you guys, your team actually did. So share a little bit about that moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's surreal. That's definitely the word to describe it. It's hard to really put it into words what it was like, but in the situation we were in, with the score being 9-0 in the ninth inning, after I got the first two outs of the inning, I tried to take my hat off and do a little 360 and look around the stadium, because you know you never know in this sport or in life when you're going to be in a situation like that again. So I tried my best to soak it up all I can. I know that I did that. I don't remember looking around the stadium at all, though. It was a surreal moment. And just to break the door down, you know, we had been, I think, 11 times to Omaha before the 21 season, and then to finally break down the door and win it all the 12th time, and to be on the mound to deliver the first national championship. That, I mean, it's words can't describe what it was like.
Well, something I noticed about.
Go ahead, come right. I knew you were going to ask. Go ahead.
Well, this is kind of more or less a statement, just talking statement. But hopefully there'll be a few kids that watch this, and, you know, obviously they know who you are. But the thing I noticed about you in that big of a moment is in the whole time I've ever seen you pitch, you get this strut about you. Like, there's a confidence strut about you, and I don't know how to describe it. And you may or may not know what I'm talking about, but it looked the same like it had looked the whole year. You know, you get a lot of guys to Omaha, and it's, I know for me especially, you know, because like you were talking about soaking in the moment, I don't think it was a extremely nervous or scared or anything like that moment. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, it's no, I try to, once you, that bullpen gate opens, I mean, it's you versus everybody else. So it's, I mean, you got to go out there with confidence. And I think even like going out there with confidence is like, it's very similar to just trying to go out there and having fun. Like,
right.
Genuinely, like I really try and enjoy every moment that I have on a baseball field. Cause it's just, it's easy for me too. I feel like I'm at home on the bump.
Right.
It's definitely a confidence thing, and you have to have confidence in yourself. This game will eat you up and spit right. You back out real quick. But no, I mean, it's confidence. It's trying to have fun. And then, I mean, the group of guys we were with, those are my best friends. I mean, I still talk to 90% of the team to this day. I mean, and it's just the camaraderie we built, and it was just, there's not many words to describe it. It felt comfortable out there every time I went out there, and I know everybody else felt like that. It was kind of like the whole team demeanor, really, because, you know, we go out there and lose the first game pretty bad, and you know, I remember a conversation me and Cameron James had back in our hotel room, because we always roomed together on the road. And he was like, man, like, we're still going to win this. Like, I have no worry at all that we're not going to come out on top of this. And sure enough, we did. And in pretty commanding, controlling fashion, I think we outscored them 22-1 in the second two games of the series. So it was like the whole team was just so much confidence came from everybody in every which direction.
Right. Well, something that the average person looking at too, are you a real mechanical guy? Like, do you get real mechanical on the mound and really, like, if stuff goes out of whack, you're real mechanical? Or are you just a uber competitor that's really aggressive and just go?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the latter of the two. It's like once you get out there, it's you can't think mechanically. It's you versus them, and you got to do what you got to do to beat them. And I mean, there's a time and a place for mechanics, but like you gotta have that bulldog mentality when you're out there, especially as like a late inning reliever. But I mean, really anybody in baseball, like, that's just, you got to be confident in everything you're putting out there.
Right. Exactly. Something else I was thinking about, and I guess this is more so a statement, but you know it, the ninth inning, focus goes through the roof for everybody that steps into the plate, steps into the box, I should say, up to the plate. And a lot of times I feel like guys that haven't closed many ball games out or been in those tight situations like that, it's almost like they create the environment in their head of like, holy crap, this is the last of the game, you know, whatever the game means, you know, this is it. It comes down to this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of it being just another three outs, do you weigh into that too much? Or
honestly, like, I just didn't, I tried my best not to think about it at all. And that, like, you, that's kind of what you were saying, is you have these guys that will create all of this. What if, you know, what if this, what if that, what if, you know, something here goes wrong. And at the end of the day, like you said, it is, it's just, you're just trying to record three more outs, just like you've done,
right?
You know, a million times before that. It's, I mean, I try not to think about it too much, because that's when things typically start to go south, is when you think more than you need to. And I think it falls back onto falls back into like just trusting yourself and having confidence in yourself too. Because I mean, if you got confidence in yourself and in what you're going to bring to the table, no situation should be too big for you.
Right.
I got a follow up question on what Kobe just asked. First of all, I got a quick curiosity question. Like, when did you know, like, you were the guy? Like, when were you playing youth sports and you knew when you stepped on the field, I'm him? Like, when did you know?
Shoot.
Like, what, 8 or 9 years old?
When I was growing up, I was always the biggest kid on the team. I was a better hitter growing up than I was a pitcher, actually. And it was more so just like, I didn't pitch a whole lot. But I would say probably around like 14 is when I started to throw a little bit harder than everybody else, kind of separated myself in that stance a little bit. So probably like around 14 is when, you know, we kind of finally were like, all right, you know, this is probably what the future is going to hold if, you know, God willing. I always switched between sports in the fall and the spring. It was baseball and football, and probably going into high school is when it kind of started to be more baseball heavy, and we kind of knew that was going to be the path for me.
So you played middle linebacker in high school, and
I played safety, but I was an extra linebacker 90% of the time.
Yeah, Kobe wanted to go that route too, but he was never the biggest kid on the field.
Oh man, yeah, Kobe. No, I was always the biggest, and then everybody caught up to me in the latter half of high school. And I mean, I'm 6'1" now, 6'2", so everybody's caught up to me at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Kobe, you still working on that?
So how hard were you throwing 9th, 10th grade year, and then how did it progress going into college?
So going into my freshman year that summer, I think I got up to like 88. And then I think it kind of just like slowly progressed after that. It was 88 going into freshman year, like 90 going into sophomore year, maybe 92. And then it was up to 94. And then I got up to 97 going into my senior year. And then I think I topped out at 98 in college, that both times I hit 98 were against Tulane, one in 2021, and then the other when I tore my UCL against them in New Orleans.
Right. The bigger question is how did you end up at Mississippi State?
With 30 Division I offers, how did you end up at Mississippi State?
well, not necessarily that. I mean, everybody here that's going to be listening to this, they're going to know if you're throwing 97 miles an hour in high school, it's a, you know, and he could have turned, I don't know his story, could have turned down a bunch of money, you know, but from the draft, obviously there's some draft talk there.
Yeah. So, I was hoping to sign out of high school. At that point in time, I wanted to go that route, instead of going to more school. The school part ended up working out for me. But I didn't have a great senior season. Going into the season, like there was some draft hype. I don't even really remember like where the projections were or anything like that. But didn't really live up to the expectations of my senior year. So ended up going to school, and I mean, the rest is history from there. I mean, you guys know how that went. And I mean, can't thank God enough that I ended up getting there. But actually committing to Mississippi State, it's kind of like I didn't know really much at all about Mississippi State or Mississippi State baseball. Really nothing like that. But Will Coggin was the recruiting coordinator at the time when they first started recruiting me, and Coach Cohen was still the head coach. So Coach Coggin, he was really, really adamant about me just coming to see the campus. He was like, just come see campus. Like, that's all I ask of you, is to just come see campus. And me and my family are like, well, I mean, we don't, it's Mississippi, we don't know a whole lot about it, but let's go check it out. And I mean, I went, checked it out, and the rest is history from there. I mean, I fell in love with the place as soon as I stepped on campus.
Right.
They have that effect. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. It's the people. People make the place great.
I do have a, because you made a statement earlier, kind of threw me for a loop. You said when you first started in high school playing baseball, you didn't pitch a lot.
No. So that was like growing up from like, I mean, up until high school.
So you made a decision.
I was more, I was probably a heavier hitter than I was a pitcher up until that 14U season when I started throwing pretty hard.
Interesting. And I'm assuming because you were him, you were a starter, you were the day one or the, what is it, weekend starter, whatever they refer to you as, you were the number one guy the entire time you were at your high school.
Freshman year, we had a couple good arms. So I was a little bit further back in the rotation. But I hit a little bit my freshman year, pitched a little bit. And then I think after freshman year, I was the number one guy on the high school team after that.
So did your high school, did they do the same thing with you they did at Mississippi State? Did they bring you in as a young guy and let you just eat up some innings and then you – because, you know, your journey at State was amazing. You pitched very little your first year there, just a few innings. I pulled up your stat. Because, as a matter of fact, I didn't even remember you pitching those few innings until I went back and saw some video. And then your then the blow-up
year. Yeah, that was the COVID year.
Yeah, your blow-up year was when they moved you to reliever, and you were lights out. And then they plugged you back in as you know, the Friday guy, the day one starter. And I'm just going to be honest with you, Landon. I watched those games, and you pitched your behind off. And your team did not help you at all.
Oh, that's baseball.
You pitched. Matter of fact, I think your decisions your last year before you got hurt was like you were 0-2, and you gave up like two earned runs in like three starts. And you were 0-2. I'm like, how does this happen?
My second start was a little rough, but my first and my third start were really good. It was kind of a crazy journey of like what role I was in all throughout my career at Mississippi State. I wanted to start the whole time I was there. You know, obviously that didn't work out the whole time I was there. Fell in love with the closer role. That kind of just fell into my lap at the time. We just needed that role to be fulfilled at the time, and kind of just ended up being a multi-inning closer guy. But I started all throughout high school, and I'm back in the starting role now. I love doing both, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, closing games are – That's a pretty special feeling, is closing the games.
I imagine so, especially in the SEC, man.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, I closed twice against Ole Miss Super Bulldog weekend in 2021, and those were like some of my two favorite appearances I ever had at Mississippi State.
Right.
You said you didn't know much about Mississippi State when you came. Did you? How quickly did it take you to understand the rivalry?
So that was like one of the things going into it. I was like, mean, I have no feelings towards Ole Miss whatsoever.
Right.
Like, don't hate them, don't love them, nothing. And, I mean, if there's maybe 3 to 5 things in this world that I hate more than Ole Miss now. So, if that tells you anything about the rivalry, I mean, it came quick, too. It was like – but especially because we had the – you know, we had the deep-root Mississippi guys that were tied to Mississippi State for generations on end. And as soon as you get on campus, the second anything Ole Miss is mentioned, it's – You know how that goes. And but no, it turned quick. And I mean, generations below me now will not be fans of Ole Miss.
Right. That is true. I am curious where they're going to put your statue, though, because they're running out of entry point to put your statue. So,
oh man, there's a handful of guys before me that deserve one much more than I do.
Well, at least you won't have to pay for a meal in Starkville ever again. So,
oh man, yeah, no, that's. I mean, the people and the fans of Starkville are awesome, and they've always treated me with just unbelievable. Me and my family.
So, COVID year 20, shortened season. I don't know how many innings you got to pitch. Obviously, you only played, what was it, like 9 games or something like that.
Yeah, I think we played 16 games, I think. Yeah, didn't get into SEC, didn't no conference play, yeah, like nothing.
I don't remember. I looked it up. I don't think it was many. It was like 7 or 8 innings, I think.
Right. Yeah, I had I think it was 7 appearances, like 13 innings.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. It was 7 appearances. I remember the number 7 for some reason sticking out.
Yeah, I think it was 13 innings. But gosh, my first outing was my worst outing that I ever had at Mississippi State. I threw 11 pitches, threw 9 balls, got yanked, had an infinity ERA after my first outing. But I mean, I got to come back out the same weekend, and thank goodness I had a good outing there, because I don't know if I would have pitched again the rest of that season if I hadn't turned it around pretty quickly.
What do you think was the reason for that? You think it was just nerves?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was nerves. Coach Fox came out there and he's like, "Hey, man, you know, you just got to breathe a little bit." And I'm like, "I am breathing. I just need to throw strikes." Right. Oh man. That was the moment got a little too big for me there. It's freshman Landon going in to close the first game of the season as a freshman in front of 11,000 people. Needless to say, I didn't come in the 9th inning of any other game that season.
Right.
11,000 people, is that's quite a bit. Is that a large crowd that you had pitched in front of, 11?
Yeah, that was pretty up there for the biggest crowd I've
okay, I didn't know. Because when we were talking about you earlier, I thought with all the scouts coming in to watch you, I figured you were pulling some big crowds. So,
I was fortunate enough to play in Japan when I was 15, and I'm not sure like how many fans were piling into the stadiums there, but we played Japan in a night game one night, and I mean it was completely sold out. I didn't pitch that game, but that was. How many ever fans were there at that game? That was the most amount before I got to Mississippi State.
What do you think the effects were the next year following that shortened season? Do you think it had any effect on the 21 season going into it? Did y'all feel like y'all needed to play more? And kind of talk about, did y'all continue to – I guess y'all went home.
Golly, I think it was like March 12th or something, March 13th, something around there. We get back from Biloxi. We were playing Texas Tech down there in a 2-game series. And, I mean, obviously we know what's going on and everything. But, I mean, none of us are like, oh, the season's going to get canceled. We're all like, oh, there's no way the season gets canceled. Well, you know, we get back from Biloxi and Coach Lem pulls us into the Omaha room and he's like, well, guys, everybody's got to go home. So, I mean, we pack everything up and go home. I was fortunate enough to have a facility here back home that I got to throw some live ABs at and stay fresh and try and get some competitive innings in, some competitive pitches thrown. So I did that for a couple, probably like a month and a half, 2 months during the summer, that summer. And then rolling into the fall and into this, especially into the spring, like, I mean, we were itching to play. And the opening weekend of the 21 season was at Globe Life, and they had all that winter weather. Like, it was ice. Everything was, the roads were iced. The airport runways were iced. Like, we didn't know if we were going to get to go, and everybody's bummed because obviously we hadn't played in 11 months, almost a year. But I mean, it, like, our team was so close that fall going into the 21 season. We probably hung out way more than we should have with all the COVID restrictions and everything. I remember, I think it was like September, and almost the whole entire team tested positive for COVID. We were out of the facility for like 3 weeks. Coach Lem was, I mean, he was not having it. But that, like, it just being away from everybody for so long, like, we were just so ready to get back. We were so happy to be with each other again. It was just, that team was so close. We did everything together. Everyone did everything together. So it was just a lot of guys that were really ready to play, and we were all close. So it was, I mean, we had everything going for us to go on that run that we went on, and goodness, we did.
Right. Well, this is a little change of gears here, and it might be a sore subject, I know, for some people. For me, I'm kind of past it, thinking about it, but yeah, Tommy John.
Yep.
Have you thought about what may have led to that, or hadn't thought about it, don't really care? And then how has everything went? Like, I guess, how many months out are you until the list that, and how you're feeling and things of that nature?
Yeah. So, I try not to put too much thought into it of like why it might have happened. Because there's really no telling what could have caused it. The way I tore it is I tore it off the bone. The actual ligament was fully intact. It just came, it detached from the bone. It could have still been a wear and tear thing. There's really no way to tell. So I didn't want to spend too much time trying to think about like what I could have done differently, because I don't really think that there were too many things that I could have done differently to prevent that. And it's almost an inevitable in the sport now. So kind of just try to move on as quickly as I could and not sit there and make myself miserable of like, oh, could I have done this different? Could I have done that different? It's been a long process. Just as much as I do. I'll be 20 months out next, like halfway through November. I got it March 15th of 2022. It's been good. It's an up and down rocky road. It really took a while before I got back in game. I didn't get out to an affiliate until late July this year. Ended up making 7 starts, which was great. Just to get back out there and get my feet wet and finish the year healthy was awesome. But I mean, it's a long tough process. It's not easy by any means. And, you know, the rehab's tough just because it gets monotonous and, you know, you get bored. And, you know, once I signed, you know, move across the country to Arizona, and everything's new people, new place, doing new things with rehab and this, that, and the other. So that part of it was tough. And then, you know, you start building back up into throwing, and you're throwing two bullpens a week, and you're trying to gain strength. You're still trying to gain strength back and feel normal. And, you know, it's a really long process that some people are able to, you know, they're able to pick up right where they left off. And then, you know, some people, it takes a little bit more time. And, I'm in the category of the people that sometimes it just takes a little bit more time. So it's, but I mean, I'm healthy now and I feel great. And, using this off season to try and get strong again and start throwing 95 again.
Right. Well, this is a thing I had been thinking about going through my progression. So I had it a month after you left July of this year as well. But, when I was at the complex throwing, I kind of undersold on what I thought was going to be easy. You know, there's a stigma behind Tommy John, like it's just an absolute thing, and come back, you're going to be better than ever, and it's going to happen immediately. And, you know, but you really can't put a time frame on it because it is a major surgery. Well, forget that. Everybody has the surgery, it seems like, but it's still a very hard thing to come back from. And then I remember about halfway through the year when I went to an affiliate, they kind of told me that, hey, it's not really high expectations for you this year. You know, get your feet wet again, pitch, get used to things again. But I remember sometime during the end of the year last year, I hit a spell where I went to where I tricked my mind a little bit. Like, I wasn't thinking about what I was doing with my arm. I wasn't thinking about, like, hey, I really need to do all my prep work to get loose to throw the same way. I just went back and done what I had done before, pitcher. And it's crazy that, you know, when you're going through stuff like that, that your mind is the strongest part of it. You know, I know you know that. You went and all that. But to the average person that hears about people coming back from Tommy John, they don't realize the mental toll it plays and how awful your thoughts to get sometimes. And maybe I'm just talking about myself. I don't know. Maybe you.
No, you're not. I mean, you're not wrong at all. In that.
And it's definitely nothing to fear. Like, you can definitely, you definitely never need to throw a pitch worried it's going to happen.
Right.
But, you know, if you're a kid and, you know, Tommy John is, you know, you have a surgery in the next couple of weeks or whatever, you got to realize that it's going to challenge your mind more so than anything else in your life with baseball, because you think you have no control over things, you know, and it's
absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing, is like you lose control of, like, you kind of get the identity of like a baseball player stripped away from you. And that's tough. Especially if you have grown up a baseball player your whole life, you know, and, you wake up one day, you know, you're pitching just like you have, you know, how many ever times before. And then you wake up the next day and, you know, you got to get surgery on your elbow. And, you know, it's going to be a year and a half before you can actually be a real baseball player again. So that's the tough part of it. That was probably the toughest part of it for me, is just like not getting to play and like trying to figure out other things about me that I hadn't had to figure out before. Like that's the kind of the mental warfare part of it, is just, there's so many things that you get taken away from you when you get hurt like that and have a major surgery.
Right. And I know it doesn't help being in a complex.
Right.
Through a glass window in a training.
Yep.
Everybody else is going to play catch and going to
play. No, it's tough. And, I mean, everybody, like you said, everybody comes back differently. It's, I mean, Some people come back in their first bullpen, they're throwing 95. So, you know, some people, they come back and they're throwing 80. And it just, it takes a different toll on everybody. And, but you just, you got to stick with it, and you got to be confident in what you're doing, and confident in the process of, I know that what I'm doing right now is going to end up helping me in the long run. And you got to stick with that, because if you get away from that, I mean, it can go south pretty quickly. You just, you gotta stay committed to getting stronger in whatever area it has to be, and for you to get back to what you needed to be and what you were before.
Right.
Landon, let's talk about the ups and downs of your career at this point. Okay. Okay. You're a pretty good high school pitcher. I mean, you were good enough that people sought your services. You end up in Mississippi State. You're able to accomplish something that the school had never done before. You were able to help win a national championship. So that's a pretty high right there. Like mm-hmm. I said, you'll never have to pay for another meal in Starkville ever again. Then you come back the next season. You're not penciled in. You're written in ink, our number one. You're going to be the guy that's going to lead us back to Omaha to win another championship. The injury occurs. You have three outings. You said, you know, two of the three were pretty good. You get injured. You're out. Surgery. You're still the second best first base coach in the history of the school. I don't want to thank you for that. And you kind of have to ride out the whole season. Have to be the big cheerleader. And then, you know, the draft comes around. You get drafted. Arizona shows a lot of faith because they feel confident that you're going to come back bigger and stronger and better than ever. You know, so they sign you. That's big deal, big deals. But psychologically, how were you able to deal with all that there?
So I get hurt, obviously, and that was terrible for me. Because all I wanted to do was finish out that year and continue to play with my best friends and for the great university that Mississippi State is, and play in the maroon and white. It's such a well-respected logo, you know, throughout history of college baseball. So it's just it's an honor to be able to wear that uniform at all. It was honestly the easiest part of my rehab was the first 4 months of rehab after surgery when I was still in Starkville, still living with my best friends, still getting to see him every day, still somewhat getting to suit up and wear that uniform. And then, you know, leave school, leave everything behind, you know, pretty much know that I'm not coming back. So that was really tough. And I really, really hated that I was completely unaware of when my last pitch was going to be thrown for Mississippi State. That really sat with me for a while. And then, you know, going through the 2 months I was at home between the season ending and then the draft, just trying to chug along and keep getting strong and trying to get healthy. And then, you know, get drafted, and draft night was crazy. Didn't know where I was going, kind of had an idea of the ballpark that I would go in. Get drafted, and, you know, I didn't know much about the D-backs or really at all. They weren't really somebody that I thought was like super heavy on me, leading up to the draft. So didn't really know much about Arizona, but, you know, get out there, and the first couple months out there were just like, pretty eye-opening to me of like what pro ball is, going to be like a little bit. And I was kind of in a weird situation, obviously, with being hurt. But I mean, it's, you know, it's whatever they need, whatever they want. It's, you know, you're kind of, you got to go with what they want. And, there's a lot of sacrifice that has to be made. And, I'm not sure that everybody really understands the true sacrifice that it takes to be a minor league baseball player. But it's psychologically, it was up and down. Like you said, there's up and downs in it. I have such a great support system around me, and they stuck with me every step of the way. So, without my mom, my dad, my sister, and some of my close friends, might not have gotten through some of the points of rehab. It's just there's dark days of that, and it's inevitable. Kind of like I was talking about earlier, you get stripped away of, kind of that part of your identity. So it's there's times where you're sitting there and, you just did your 17th day in a row of the same rehab stuff. And you're like, when is this going to end? When am I actually going to go get to play again? So it's tough, but if you love it, you'll stick it out and you'll get through it no matter what.
If Kobe's beard was a little sweeter like yours, that sounds like that's almost his story exactly. The more, because he's been really candid about his situation, his rehab and injury and all that kind of stuff. And other guys that we've talked to that have had a similar injury, y'all's stories are almost identical. Mm-hmm. First of all, you're ballers. You guys want the ball in your hand every day, regardless right. if you're hurt or not. And your draft story is sort of similar to his. I'm going to say Kobe was a bit shocked the day that he found out he was going to get drafted. Kobe, weren't you trying to prepare to play a baseball game that day?
Well, no, we was practicing. We was getting ready for either a regional or super regional.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
His buddy rolled in and told me, man, you got drafted. What?
Well, and the thing was, he kept messing around with everybody. So, he didn't want to be that guy who got hyped up and they were clowning.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and then it was real. I was like, man, I just got drafted in the sixth round. Let's go, It's a crazy thing. But speaking on Starkville, this is a little silly, I guess, but I'm assuming you like to eat pretty good. What's your favorite mm-hmm. place to eat in Starkville?
Gosh, that's tough. I really, really like Little Dewey. I like Two Bros. Two Bros wings are top notch. Starkville Cafe was the spot for breakfast. We were forced to go there every day we didn't have any class or anything like that. And after the season ended, we had to go to Starkville Cafe for breakfast every single day. I don't know if that's how it was for y'all, Colby, but I ate enough Starkville Cafe to feed the whole city of Starkville.
All right, Starkville Cafe, if you heard that, you can sponsor this video.
Oh, man.
So I had a question a while ago. You guys got into the injury and rehab stuff. When you were growing up, you didn't live in a huge town because you grew up in Georgia. You didn't grow up in a mm-hmm. huge community, right? You're not a
It's not like Atlanta or anything. I went to a pretty big high school. We were 7A classification. I graduated with 875 people.
Holy cow. That's the entire community that Kobe lives in. The question is, that's pretty good. That's pretty nice size high school. Did you feel like you needed to do showcases and travel ball and all that kind of stuff to be seen? Or did you feel like you could go a different path because of, your exposure, especially at the high school level?
Yeah. So I was really lucky to play with a great travel ball organization I started playing with them when I was 13. It's called Team Elite, but we went to some big events early on, and we really started doing that, especially when I turned 14. And then that's kind of when the interest from some colleges started to kick up. And I got to go to a handful of USA baseball events. That's where I was lucky enough to make the team when I was 15 and go to Japan. So I was really lucky in getting exposed at an early age. So later in high school, didn't really feel the need to have to go to a bunch of showcases and all that kind of stuff. But it's, I mean, that world has changed so much since I've been in it. And it's like, travel ball is almost like completely showcase ball now. So it's kind of unfortunate. But then, you know, hopefully high school baseball and in the culture of that still is driven by wins and not, you know, people posting stuff on Twitter of, you know, whatever they did that day. You know, hopefully it stays with winning being the number one priority. And I know with all the recruiting restrictions and everything now, like the number one way for these kids to get recruited is probably through Twitter and a college coach just scrolling through his Twitter timeline and, you know, coming across a video of a kid. But I think the summer circuit is just like completely gone one dimensional of like just showcases, and it's not teaching the game of baseball per se, you know?
Right.
All right. So just a little rapid fire deal. I want to find out something. I know what the answer to this first question, I know what Colby's answer is going to be. Best pitcher, can't count yourself. Best pitcher you were ever on a staff with at any level.
I think the easy answer for me is Will Bednar.
Okay.
I mean, he's a gamer. He's a gamer. Straight, like I was talking about that bulldog mentality earlier. I mean, he's the epitome of it. Like he's a dog.
Colby, we kind of expected that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Colby's answer is going to be Ethan Small.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Colby informed me the first time I ever asked Colby, I said, "Colby, off y'all's crew, who's the first one that's going to make it to the majors?" I didn't finish the question before he answered. And you were correct, sir.
Yep.
All right, so number two, most dominant performance at any level you've ever played on the mound?
Gosh, it's between two. They were both at Mississippi State, but opening day in 21 when we were playing at Globe Life, and I came in relief and threw four innings, 12 up, 12 down, 10 Ks, came in with the bases loaded, no outs, struck out the side. Like that was, I mean, especially with all the hype of like I was saying earlier, of us not playing for almost an entire year. And well, I mean, not playing anybody except for ourselves, obviously, like finally getting to suit up and play against another team. And then being able to go out there and then have that performance, like it just made it that much better. My last start at Mississippi State when I tore my UCL, that's probably more dominant than what it was against Texas on opening day. I mean, I faced 11 guys and struck out 10 of them.
The crazy thing about that story is I was in the stadium the day that happened, and I'd always heard the collective gasp comment, but I'd never actually experienced it. And when they went out to check on you, everybody collectively, 10,800 something, whatever it was, gasped all at one time. It actually brought goosebumps up on your arms because of what happened, because it was weird. It was just creepy.
Yeah.
Kobe, you've never had a 12 and 10, have you? 12 batters faced, 10 strikeouts. You've been close, huh?
Well, the first – I never faced 12 batters in a row, but the first well,
– you know, what we could say here is you were so good at what you did at Mississippi State, it took Landon having to be a multi-inning closer because there was not a setup guy like Kobe.
Come on now. No, I was just a little one-inning bird dog, but –
Bird.
as far as in pro ball and all that, I think I've only thrown like two innings is the most I've ever thrown in an outing or whatever. So, but yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, I went and watched him in Biloxi the other night. Don't let him downplay it. He was goosing it in there about 97.
Yeah, I've seen him throw a couple times.
All right, and now the question every pitcher knows: what is the longest home run you've ever given up?
All right, people are gonna say like any Mississippi State fan will probably say, if they watched me play my career, was the Nico Cabadas home run in the Super Regional against Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. But I have picture evidence that that ball only went 411 feet.
Okay.
Nobody believes me.
Yes, picture
evidence. Nobody believes me.
It's the one that went out to right field, right?
Yeah. The one that cleared the scoreboard.
It went 400 feet in the air and 400 feet in distance. I mean, it went as high as it did far.
Oh, yeah. You talking about the Greek freak from Notre Dame?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he put the ball in the orbit.
It was a nuke.
Well, it's such a porch right there in Riot to where if you get it out 100 foot there,
yeah,
it's still only 400 foot because it's right.
Well, and it was nighttime. And I mean, like, literally the ball did disappear into the night. Like,
he
absolutely did.
But in Landon's defense, he came right back, rolled over the double play and got us out. We were done with it. But don't feel bad, because I believe Preston Johnson also gave up a bomb to that guy.
Preston gave up one in Omaha in game two against
Preston
Vandy.
Gave it up and waved it goodbye. And waved at it. Why didn't you think of that, Landon?
I gave up a home run in Omaha that was probably further than the one that Cabadas hit off of me.
Really?
Mike Antico hit it off of me.
Well, Omaha is such a big place anyway.
Right. Like, that was – Coach Lem was telling us that the whole week leading up to it. And he's like, I mean – it's like, there's not going to be a single ball hit out. Like, they're not going to hit anything out. And sure enough, first guy I faced, or maybe it wasn't the first guy I faced in Omaha, but I mean, there's homers left and right, and we're like, what are you talking about, Coach Lem? This place is a freaking cracker jack.
Yeah, I knew that was what you were going to say. I actually saw that when I was there to witness that one, and it did go a long way. It went. There's supposed to be a red X on the sidewalk out on across the from before it actually hit. And I don't know. I have never seen that red X. But it's supposed to be one. Oh. It's okay though, man. Look where he's at, and look where you are right now.
Hey, well, he's doing pretty well too. He's a real good ball player.
He's scuffling. He's a good player. He should have played football.
Come on now.
All right. Colby, we got about another minute, man. You got one last parting shot for Landon before he gets out of here. Luke, this might be the last time we get a chance to talk to him. He's big timer now, so.
That is. Outside of the College World Series and winning that, what is your most favorite thing that happened at Mississippi State?
Oh, man. That
memory.
Don't talk about any illegal activities because we're recording that.
Oh, man, this is a tough question. Golly, there's so many good times. It's crazy. I the easy answer would be the Super Regional, obviously, right? But I want to come up with, like, a better one that not many people would think about. And I know I've thought about this. Like, I know I have thought about this a million times too. This might not be the top moment, but Luke Hancock's walk-off grand slam against Tulane in 21. I mean, we had bad blood with them that year for whatever reason. Like, between the coaching staffs a little bit too. Like, I don't know what was going on. Like, but there was some bad blood, and like, they were talking all the smack that they could. They beat us the night before on Friday night. The old top, that's what Coach Lem tried to check him for having pine tar in his glove. And he didn't have pine tar in his glove, whatever. That, you know, just set them off. They were like, they had a huge ego, just like as a team, whatever. I think they were up like 5-3 going into the ninth. We tied up. Hammer comes up to the plate and bases loaded. I think it was first pitch, just nuke. And Bart and Charlie's call of it is really, really good too. But that was such a good memory. Like that's when we knew, like we walked them off twice on Saturday and Sunday. Like they had us dead to right to sweep us. Right. And that's when we knew, like, this team's special. Like, we just, there was so much fight in our team, so much resiliency. It was awesome.
Right. Well, I have a memory for me, and it didn't hit me until I was there. I remember the last game I played at Mississippi State. It was super regional. We were going to Omaha. And I remember, you know how the kids, that when you're coming out of the door to the parking lot right there, all the kids are standing right there wanting you to mm-hmm. autograph. And I didn't realize it at the time. I thought of it a few times, and I had never really signed autographs or anything like that. I thought of it as a chore because there were so many kids autographed. Like, you'd sign your name 600 times, it felt like, mm-hmm. out there, you know. And I remember I walked out the double doors to the side of the stadium to kind of bypass it. My parents mm-hmm. and I was going to go talk to them. And then I remember my mom and dad were standing there, and they told me, they said, son, this is the last time you're going to get to experience that. You need to go back through there, walk mm-hmm. through. And I'm glad I did. But being a player, and some guys, you know, they don't like that kind of thing. But I remember being a kid thinking, if I was ever a guy signing an autograph for somebody, that'd be pretty cool one day. And then years down the road, there I was trying to evade it. But it's such a cool – that was such a cool memory for me to mm-hmm. look at. Like, man, there's 600, however many, 1,000 people, however yeah. many kids right there. Want your right. autograph, you know?
Yeah, no, that was always awesome. Gosh, the Mississippi State baseball fans are just, it's second to none, really. Like, you just can't say enough good things about them.
Right.
Well, Landon, I tell you what, we have thoroughly enjoyed it. We've spent nearly an hour talking to you. That's yes, an hour of precious time that you were fortunate. We're fortunate enough you gave up to talk to us. We appreciate it. We wish you all the success in the world. You know we're going to be following your journey. And, hey, if you get a chance, come back to Starkville, man. Come back and see us every now and then.
Yes, sir, I will. I love, like, Starkville, Mississippi is my second home for the rest of my life.
Well, like I said, come on in. We love to have old players back for sure. Shoot, they'll let you hang out in the suites now, man. You're big time.
Oh, man.
Hey, they told Kobe he could even come back. You know, he's just too busy right now. So,
oh, no.
All right, guys. Kate, thank you enough. Good, Kobe, yes, especially thank glad you. To have you back, brother. It's been a while. I've been running solo for a while here with Kobe trying to chase a dream, and it was really fun to have him back tonight also. It took a big-timer like you to get him back on the show. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Look for a slider grip, man. That's why I got on. I'm just
I understand. Look, Landon, your team headed to winning a world championship in baseball.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. They might go ahead, if they win the ring, they might go ahead and call you on up next year, let you pitch a little bit next year.
Hey, I'm all for it. However it has to happen, I'm all for it.
Like I said, can't thank you enough for being on tonight, and we'll catch up with you later, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's going to be it for tonight. We want to thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week.